2 o'clock. This is Mike Richards 1-4. Jeremy Taggart is sitting right to my left. My name is Mike Hogan, in for Michael, who's back next week. No, Mike's got another week off, right? Man,
yeah.
Taking all the downtime in the summer. Nice call, Michael.
Yeah,
so he'll be back in a couple of weeks. Let's see, coming up a little bit later on, Mike Richter is going to join us, going into the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame again, this time as a member of the 1996 World Cup winners. Also, Sean Lemon of the Argo is going to drop by and joining us now in studio, a man who's going to be back in the studio again at 4 o'clock. Scott MacArthur joins us. Hello.
How are you, boys?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
Great. I'm great.
Are you
good?
Great
times. Yes.
You're great.
I had a day off yesterday, and I'm back at it today.
What did you do?
Did you go to the Hip Show?
I wish. I did not have tickets.
Yeah.
So Brian Hayes, who of course will be in this afternoon,
yep.
I have tasked him with the full. He is responsible for giving us the full rundown.
He but went?
Yes.
But, oh,
and
he did.
And I did see on Twitter. Obviously, I can't describe it because I wasn't there. But the Barilko thing.
Oh wow, that must have been amazing.
For those who don't know, they got rid of all of the banners. They're putting new banners up, but they brought back the Barilko one for 50
last
Mission
night.
Cup.
And
wow,
the spotlight was on it as they sang 50 Mission
that
Cup.
That must have been intense.
Reading that on Twitter, I almost cried.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's very cool. So I'll be listening, obviously, at 4 o'clock as you get the debriefing.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's good. We were talking a little bit about baseball generally as opposed to going specifically with the Jays, but Upton last night, 3 stolen bases. He stole home earlier this season. Jankowski stole again last night. The Padres have 4 steals of home this year. I've been able to find 7 so far this year. Billy Hamilton going crazy in the National League. Was it 26 stolen bases in 24 games or something like
crazy.
That?
Crazy.
Are we seeing a return to
what's
small
going ball? On? I love it.
Oh, Hoagie.
I'm hoping.
No, this is so you, right?
Ah,
this is
see?
Right up your alley.
Absolutely. Am I getting overexcited here by what's happening?
I don't know, Hoagie. I'm fully expecting you in 2 months to have like a mid-80s mullet just to celebrate mid-80s baseball.
Yeah.
Like business,
why not?
Business
70s
up top,
Pete Rose.
Party
right?
At the back.
I'll do the Dennis Eckersley thing.
Yeah.
Wear the hat with the big mullet at the back.
Hey, booking home.
According to Tony La Russa, it never went out of style. He's still got it down there running the Diamondbacks.
That's true.
He's kind of got that Little House on the Prairie thing going on.
House on the Prairie thing?
Well, the farm.
Oh, okay.
The Jebediah hair.
Yeah, exactly. See, Jeremy bailed me out.
Okay. I didn't get to watch the show. I didn't get the reference.
Well, it's like Michael Landon and all the longish style hair. Are we seeing a return? I don't know. I mean, the game has changed a little bit in the last 5-10 years because clearly. I was going to say clearly PEDs are out of the game. I should probably refrain from that. But they're harder to find. I'm not entirely sure that there are men walking around with syringes in either butt cheek in open view of everybody in the clubhouses anymore. But, I think it's a combination of things. The speed guys who can get on base, right? That's the key.
Sure, absolutely.
You know, last year I remember when the Jays got Ben Revere and there was all this talk, well, he's obviously the leadoff hitter. Now, Ben Revere had the 2 best months of his career playing for the Blue Jays, so I think we might misinterpret Ben Revere more broadly.
Yeah.
And my point on that is that he's really not an on-base guy. He's got all the speed, but do you want him hitting one? Because you can't steal second if you're not on first.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like, to me, who were the 2 best leadoff hitters of the 1980s? Who were the 2 best?
Ricky Henderson and Tim Raines.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But it wasn't because they were fast.
They were on base all the
that
time.
That helped.
Yeah. Yes.
But it was because they were on. Tim Raines. I mean, how Tim Raines, and I'm in Jonah Carey and everybody else's camp with a brain on this, how Tim Raines is not in the Hall of Fame is beyond absurd.
Travesty.
Because if you add up hits plus walks.
He's 3970 or something.
Plus hit
like that.
By pitch.
Yeah.
I mean, he's on base almost 4,000 times in his career. Give me a break.
That's got everything to do with the spotlight of not being in Montreal and also just the writers. That's the weight of the Writers Association.
But this is the fascinating thing as the BBWAA changes. And, I mean, MLB.com writers are now in the BBWA. I have gotten the opportunity to join.
Yeah. Oh, good.
This changed all last offseason. Now I'm I have to be in for 10 years before I get a Hall of Fame vote. But I begin to wonder for somebody like Alex Rodriguez and the PED stuff,
Will he be the first to get in?
Could, because he, if as long as he lasts on the ballot, it was 5 years until he can qualify, and then he's got 10 years on the ballot. We're into the 2030s. Mm-hmm. If it's people like me in my 50s voting, like I would vote for Alex Rodriguez for the Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. Tim Raines needs to get in next year, or else it's going to be up to the Veterans Committee, which holds court every 2 years. Mm-hmm. And that's ex-players and all that, that and Hall of Fame ex-players who are on the Veterans Committee. And I think that he will get in next year. But if Tim Raines... if Tim Raines played today and retired tomorrow and accomplished what he accomplished, he would be, I don't know if he'd be first ballot, but he'd be darn near close.
Yeah, no, it's similar to Ichiro, like the what Ichiro's done. Everyone's saying that's our probably legitimate first ballot guy.
Well, 3,000 hits is what you're in. That stands
absolutely.
Out.
Absolutely. But in the modern era, I mean, those numbers would kind of blow people away if they saw it again.
Mm-hmm. Right. I'm with you on Raines, and it's criminal that he's the best leadoff hitter in the history of baseball, not named Ricky Henderson.
Right.
Is he the best player that's not in the Hall of Fame other than like Shoeless Joe Jackson?
Who are eligible? Rose.
Yeah.
Well, Pete Rose too, but yeah. That could be a fair comment. I'd have to give that more thought and look.
Mm-hmm. But in the conversation of top three or four, probably.
And I would have to go back and look, guys. But like, if you contrast, and this name has come up before, so it's not as if I'm having a completely original thought here. But if you contrast the number of times that Raines was on base versus Tony Gwynn, I don't think there's that big a difference. It's just that Tim walked a lot more.
Which
than
for
Gwynn.
A leadoff hitter is. Like a single.
Get on base.
Yeah.
Well, it could be like
a double.
With Tim Raines, it's like a triple.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you got a runner in scoring position after four balls.
And people still, the lifetime batting average, like that just comes and floats into their head, right?
Batting
they see
average.
Anything over 300 and it's like, okay.
Batting average is pointless.
Yeah.
A pointless statistic. Jose Bautista is not having a good year, but he's hitting about 220.
Mm-hmm.
He's getting on base 350, 35% of the time. Now, for Bautista, that is also a down season, OBP-wise. But there are people in Major League Baseball who would cut off their right hand to get on base 35% of the time.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Right? Yeah. So Jose is not doing his thing. And I don't know if he's hurt again, but he's not doing his thing this year. But he's still getting on base 35% of the time. And with Donaldson and Encarnacion hitting behind you, you should be able to score your fair share of runs.
Are you going to get into the whole theory of protection in baseball? Because I know there are people who hate that theory.
No, my point more is that you got really good hitters hitting behind you.
Understand.
If you're on base, there's a better shot that they're going to cash you in than if it's Pilar and Goins hitting after you.
No, for sure. Absolutely.
Let's sort of, Scotty Mac obviously join us here in studio. The TSN 1050 poll question of the day. Which Blue Jays pitcher has the best chance of winning a Cy Young this year, Happ or Sanchez?
Man,
isn't this a great conversation to have?
Yeah, exactly. It's amazing we're having this conversation.
Yeah, and it's legit.
There are about 40% of the starting rotation who could win the Cy Young Award this year.
For a team that was not supposed to have any pitching after Stroman.
That's right.
But between those two.
By the way, and I'm not hedging here, I'll get into my answer in a moment. If you're really bored at some point tonight, you just got your feet up, there's a game on or whatever, go to any article that was written when Jay Happ was brought back and read the comments sections.
I'm eating my hat right here. Like I thought it was crazy last year because they saw Price go and him come in.
Right.
That had a lot to do with it.
Sure.
Well.
There was no doubt there was emotion. Yeah. But
and $13 million, people were like, where'd that come from?
But the very weird thing is that that's what mediocre pitching costs now in baseball.
Do you remember anybody to give props, aside from the, I guess, the propaganda wing of the media, that at the time of the signing went, wow, that could actually work. I like the fact that they're bringing in Happ.
You mean work as in he's going to go 16-3 with a sub-3
ERA
into mid-August?
He'll be more of the National League J-Happ that we saw last year, as opposed to the last J-Happ we saw in Toronto.
I don't know about that. I mean, I kind of hedged on it at the time, I remember, because I just knew David Price wasn't coming back, and that there was no way that this new regime was going to pay anybody $30 million a year.
Yeah.
Right? So knowing that David Price was going elsewhere, and it hurt a little more that it was Boston because that's a division rival, and if he had a year that everybody thought that a guy of his caliber would, it could be an even bigger pain in the butt than it has been, but he hasn't been that good for the Red Sox. So knowing that Price was moving on, you realized, okay, what are they going to do with Aaron Sanchez? He should be a starter, but back then it wasn't exactly known. And if he made the rotation, was he going to be a guy who went through some of those ups and downs that young pitchers do in the way that he did the first 2 months last year? You had Stroman coming back for a full season after more or less a lost year due to the knee thing. And then you had Estrada, and was he going to be able to replicate what he did last year? You needed guys. You needed arms. Drew Hutchison was terrible last year. Mm-hmm. And could you count on him going out there every fifth day? So you needed arms. You needed people. To me, I looked at it, too, as a bit of a bridge. Estrada and Happ on 2 and 3 year deals. You've got Sanchez and Stroman up here. You're hoping John Harris, your first round pick from last year, eventually works out and gets up here. TJ Zoik, the pitcher, big, tall, 6'7" guy. They didn't know they had him, but he was drafted this year. Those guys in the 2 and 3 year contract range might be able to serve as bridges for these college age arms who, if they make it, could be ready to contribute by 2019-ish. You know?
Perfect.
So I think that's where the Hap thing sort of made sense as a mid to low end of the rotation guy, understanding. And his deal is 3 and 36, and it's 10, 10, and 16. That's how he's being paid over the 3 years. Understanding that that's kind of what guys get paid in this day and age.
Very good. We'll be listening at 4 o'clock when you're back with Hayes for Overdrive. Thank you, sir.
You got it. Thanks,
that's
boys.
Scott MacArthur. We have some breaking news in the world of sports. Let's go to Candace DeBay for the update. Candace.
Yeah, thank you, Hoagie. So some NHL news. Patrick Waugh has announced he is leaving the Colorado Avalanche. Of course, he was the head coach and vice president of hockey ops for the team, so he just released a statement and basically saying his visions and the organization's visions do not line up, and thanks to the team. So yeah, Patrick Waugh leaving the Avalanche as coach and VP of hockey ops. Back to you, Hoagie.
Thank you very much, and that is, I guess, surprising news to say the least. Raw with the full statement. It sounds like from the gist of the text that he's not getting along with the rest of the organization as far as vision for the hockey team, and he just said, okay, if we're not on the same page, I may as well go somewhere else.
He loves blowing up, eh?
No,
it's not different than that time on the bench.
Yep, he said, we got to bring it to a higher level to achieve this. The vision of the coach and VP Hockey Ops needs to be perfectly aligned with that of the organization. He must also have a say in the decisions that impact the team's performance. These conditions are not currently met. That kind of gives me an indication that he wants to be more hands-on on what's going on in the operation. They're saying no, so he's saying adios.
What kind of a happening would it be if they give Therrien the boot Waugh back? Wouldn't that be like they would just have parades in the streets. People would think that they already won the cup in Montreal, right?
Let's get some more updates. Joining us now from the TSN hockey department, obviously, Frank Cervelli's on the line. Frank, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, guys. How are you?
Good. Did you see this coming? Did anybody see this coming?
I mean, I didn't exactly see it coming, and certainly not with the timing. We're, 5 weeks or 6 weeks before the opening of training camp. If something like this is to happen, usually you'd see it happen sometime earlier in the summer or just after the season ends. But I think that there was certainly some long rumored discord there between that Avalanche front office and basically just the way that the entire organization was set up. Because when I look at Patrick Waugh's statement and I hear that, you know, someone with his title of not only head coach but VP of hockey ops say that he doesn't have complete control, it was a really unique situation from the start, because the belief was that Patrick Waugh was the guy that was, you know, pulling the strings for this team and making a lot of the decisions, sometimes, certainly with regards to player personnel, over Joe Sakic. So even though Joe Sakic had the title of general manager, he had really been working almost equally hand in hand with Patrick Waugh. And sometimes we'd hear rumblings that Patrick Waugh was the guy making these decisions. So either they decided to pull away some of that leeway that Patrick Waugh had, or there was some sort of other, issue that was underlying here that caused him to step away at this time.
Historically, I'm trying to think of another instance where this happened and caused a major rift. And the first instance that comes to mind is Ted Nolan back in Buffalo, when it seemed he and Muckler were not seeing eye to eye, and the accusations were that Nolan was trying to pull a power play to get more power. What happens to Raw in your situation going forward? Does it help him that he's parting this way, or does it hurt him that he was not able to play nice in the sandbox with the rest of the organization?
I can't say that it helps, but I think part of the reason why, the Avalanche hired him was, when they did a couple years ago, was not only just to try and help turn this team around, but when you hire someone like Patrick Waugh, you want that strong personality, and it's part of the reason that's made him so successful. You saw it when he played, and sort of just the strong personality that he had, the bullheaded player that he was in the crease, and he brought that to the bench. You remember some of his first games on the bench as an NHL head coach, having words with other coaches. I think there was a partition that fell down at one point during an argument. I'm not sure if that was his first game as an NHL head coach, it certainly was very early on in his career where we saw that fire come out. So I don't know what this means next for him. I can't say that it helps, but I think if he was in a situation where he had complete autonomy or complete control, which was never really made clear publicly as to whether, as I said before, he was the guy that was pulling the strings or not, if he had that and that was taken away, certainly you could see from an outsider's perspective why that would make him upset and cause him to leave, because he doesn't have that control anymore. And when that is taken away and your job title changes, mm-hmm. and the way that you do your job, I'm not sure that you could fault him if that was the case. But really, the way that this came out and him releasing this statement on his own, not even through the Avalanche or their mm-hmm. PR department, I think speaks to the rift that has been going on with the Avalanche for a little while now. This isn't something that just popped up on August 11th. I think this has been going on for a while.
Frank, a pleasure. Thank you for doing this on such short notice.
Thank you, guys.
Joining us from the TSN hockey department, that's Frank Ciravalli, and getting his early take mm-hmm. on what happened with Patrick Waugh, who is no longer with the Colorado Avalanche. We'll discuss that when we come back. That's Jeremy Taggart. I'm Mike Hogan. This is TSN 1050. It's 2:22. This is the Mike Richards Show, 1-4 here on TSN 1050. My name's Mike Hogan, along with Jeremy Taggart, and we'll keep you company until the Overdrive boys arrive. Tomorrow night on this radio station, it's Argo football as the Winnipeg Blue Bombers come to town. Our next guest has been a really nice addition. He joined the club in BC a couple of weeks into the season, and 3 sacks already. Sean Lemon's on the line. How you doing, Sean?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself?
Good. How are you liking the Toronto leg of your career?
Oh, I love it so far. It's been a blessing to be here with a great group of guys and a good coaching staff, and just very excited.
What's been the best fit for you personally?
The locker room. I'd say the locker room is, we have a real good locker room, veteran group of guys. Everybody welcome to be here good and just mesh well together.
Okay, let me ask you then, because you went to war against a lot of these guys for a long time. Who have you kind of bonded with who you didn't know before you came to Toronto? And maybe who surprised you character-wise that you had one vision of because of what you saw on the field, and then you get to know them a little bit, and it's like, man, I didn't know this guy was like that.
Funny you said that, because me and Van Zyl were just talking about that today in the locker room, like competing against him for so many years now in the CFL and actually getting to know him as a person as well as a player here. And I was very surprised, because we talk a lot of trash to each other on the field, and to see his personality outside of that is very it's been different for me.
What's Van Zyl like as a trash talker? Does he pick his spot? Is he ruthless? Is he funny?
Yeah, he's right on the money with it. He'll, like, let's say me as a defensive end, if I'm making a pass rush move and it didn't work, and he'll bring that up repeatedly, so you won't probably go back to that move. So yeah, he's pretty talented at trash talking.
You have an interesting perspective of being able to enjoy both types of football with the NFL and the CFL. What's your take on that?
So I've just been blessed and lucky to have an opportunity, been able to have an opportunity in the CFL and in the NFL. Just very thankful. I just try to it's one thing when you look at the NFL, a league like the NFL from the outside looking in, when you actually get a chance to go down there and compete and understand that, you know, talent-wise, there is a difference between CFL and NFL, but it's not a huge difference, you know what I mean? So just know that a lot of CFL guys can't go to the NFL and compete.
What's the biggest adjustment with the yard off the ball? You've probably been asked this a lot, but a lot of guys have different answers to this, oddly enough. But from your position, with your strengths, what really plays into your strengths as having that extra yard?
It helped me out a lot, you know, rushing up here for four or five years now, and getting a chance to go to the NFL and understand that I got to get off the ball fast. It's like it's already programmed in my mind because I'm already behind because I'm a yard off the ball. So when I went to the NFL, I had a lot of success in my pass rushing abilities and stuff like that. So it helped out a lot.
I want to ask you about Winnipeg coming in, because if we were having this conversation 3 weeks ago and said the Bombers are coming to town, it would have been, well, there's the free space on the bingo card, right? They were not playing very well. And all of a sudden, the last couple of weeks, they look like a different team, especially offensively, and maybe there's no coincidence that they've changed quarterbacks. When you take a look at the film, what has made Winnipeg flip that switch?
They're playing good team football. You know, they're believing in what their coaches are telling them. And they've had a few balls bounce their way, you know, in the course of the game. If you can get two of them to bounce your way, but to get five of them and be up 31-0 the first half, like that's, you know, you can't. That's a perfect game. You can't ask for anything better than that. But they're definitely believing in what their coaches are coaching them, and they're playing with some great passion. And you know, that's half the battle. If you go out there and you believe in what your coaches are telling you, and you're playing with the passion, you know, you're going to do some good things.
Sean, you came into Toronto as a visitor and had to play at the Rogers Centre, and let's just say it wasn't before a full house for the most part. We'll be kind with that. What's it like playing at BMO?
BMO is a great addition for us. You know, to first of all, to be the only CFL team to play on grass, you know, that's an advantage for us. A lot of people are really caught off guard when they actually feel it. You know, it's one thing knowing it coming into the week, but to actually feel the grass surface, it's definitely a different surface. Feels a lot better for us. You know, we get a little bit comfortable on it every time we play it, and it's a good atmosphere for us. Tailgating with the fans and a lot of fans in the stadium. It's a real home for us.
With the natural grass, with footwear, and a lot of people don't think about this, but how much did it have to change? Did you have to try two or three different lengths of cleats before you found a comfortable fit on this surface?
No, I didn't. I'm very lucky that, you know, my proud sponsor Adidas, they look out for me pretty good. So I'm pretty lucky that fortunate enough to have a good option of cleats, and, you know, my molds work pretty good on the grass.
See how you dropped that sponsor? That was
nice
awesome.
One.
You've been doing this for a while.
Most definitely. I got to take care of the guys that take care of you. Right?
Absolutely.
Right.
Get some sleep tonight and go get them tomorrow. Thanks so much for doing this.
Thanks for having me.
That's Sean Lemon, defensive end for the Toronto Argonauts, who has been a nice addition to the front four and given them just another awesome pass rusher. And the Argonauts, with this Stubler system defensively, they go get the ball on the back end and they go get quarterbacks up front. It's a good defense. It's only going to get better as they continually get used to the system.
Getting a little bit more info.
See,
I can't
good.
Wait for tomorrow.
There you go. You can watch big number 40 tomorrow and say, hey, I talked to that dude.
That's right.
And you'll see him and he'll go, man, he's big.
Yes.
That's a Sean Lemon. When we come back, the big breaking news is obviously the Patrick Roy situation. He has stepped down from his job with the Colorado Avalanche. James Myrtle will talk about Roy. And just because of his background in analytics, I don't think he's going to have a lot of nice things to say about Patrick Roy.
Oh.
We'll explain why when we come back. That's Jeremy Taggart. I'm Mike Hogan. This is Richards 1-4 on TSN 1050. It's 2:30. What are you giggling at?
It's Darius again.
Little Darius Rucker.
He's the Milton Berle of South Carolina, if you know what I mean. I don't know how we got there.
That's an interesting reference, and for the people who got it, they
used to play down in South Carolina, and he'd be at the bar hanging out because the hoodie was just blowing up.
Yeah.
And he would like to hang out. He'd like
That's good.
A bit of a reputation.
So he's a good guy.
A good guy,
That's
yeah.
the main
the
thing.
The ladies love him.
And for those who got that reference, they almost drove off the road. Coming up a little bit later on, Uncle Shawnee's going to do the Pro Line Best Bets. First up, though, the big news all of a sudden in the NHL is that Patrick Roy and the Colorado Avalanche have parted company. Joining us now to break things down is James Myrtle from the Globe and Mail. How you doing, James?
I'm good, guys. How are you?
Good, thank you. From your perspective, you're a guy who is heavily into the analytics. Can you explain how bad Colorado was in Corsi?
They were dead last in the league. So they were the worst team. They were pretty much what Randy Carlyle's Leafs were there for a couple of years, where they spent a lot of time in their own end. And tactically, the Patrick Waugh Avalanche struggled the whole time he was there. They got really fortunate in his first season where they made the playoffs and had that big run. But a lot of that was them getting lucky and Semyon Varlamov having a great year in goal. And when that didn't happen, they looked the way that they did the last 2 years, which was pretty pathetic.
So this could be unintentionally a fortuitous move for the Avalanche if Waugh is gone, in your or am I putting words in your mouth here?
No, I think it is. I think it is helpful for Colorado, but it's probably even more so helpful for them because Patrick Waugh seemingly wanted some of the best players gone. He wanted to move out. It's hard to nail down exactly what changes he wanted to make, but there was a division in that front office. There were a lot of conversations about Tyson Barrie and Matt Duchene and Gabriel Landeskog even, and you talked to other teams around the league, and they had a hard time making sense of what was going on there because it seemed like every few weeks or every month there'd be a different high-profile star player from Colorado in the rumor mill. And I think part of what happened is that you've got someone who's your head coach but who's also in charge of hockey operations who also wants to say in what's happening with the roster. And Petr Waugh was supposed to sort that out with Joe Sakic, and it wasn't sorting itself out very well.
Chatting with James Myrtle. Hey, James, what do you think? How much is Therrien sweating? Is this dramatic? Like, I'm really appreciating the idea, this possibility, because he's kind of had the sword of Damocles dangling a little bit on his above his head. Habs fans are going ape already. What are the chances?
I could see it happening. I could see them getting off to a poor first 30 or 40 games. And, Mark Bergevin's very close with Michel Therrien. They're... he gave him a vote of confidence, I think, when he made the PK Subban trade. So he's going to have some rope. But the fact that there's another high-profile former Hab bilingual coach available, yeah, I think that's a possibility.
Not to mention he's been kind of banished from the house since that kind of happened. It would just be such a culmination and a full circle of having him come back, almost like when the Yankees brought back Yogi Berra, that kind of vibe.
I'm not sure there's any evidence that Patrick Waugh is a very good coach, though. I mean, it's a thing. So, and the Habs are in win-now mode with that trade and bringing in Radulov and Carey Price where he is with his contract. And, I mean, they need to try and make some noise. So, that would be a bad call to make that decision.
A marriage made in analytics hell would be Patrick Waugh and Shea Weber, would it not?
Well, I wouldn't go that far.
Okay.
I think that what's happening with Shea Weber and the analytics stuff is that PK Subban is an analytics darling. He's
sure.
A guy that all of the stats people love. So when you're weighing the two players against one another, Shea Weber doesn't look as good, but he's still a very good player. And I think that the first year or two in the wake of that trade is going to look relatively even. I think where it gets problematic is the fact that Shea Weber is 4 years older than PK Subban, and well, I think we started to see that last year where he was slowing down a little bit in Nashville, and I think that's why the Predators made that trade, is that they were worried about where his game is going from here.
James Myrtle talking about the news in the NHL today. If you're just tuning in, Patrick Waugh has stepped down from his post with the Colorado Avalanche. Who's a good fit for that job in your estimation?
I saw a report that Joe Sacco was going to be brought back.
So
as
Sacco
the coach.
And Sakic.
So, Sacco, I mean, he had some struggles there when he was coaching the Avalanche, but I think they're put in a position where they had to come up with someone pretty quickly. It's not often that it's pretty much never happens that your head coach resigns in the middle of August when nothing's going on in the NHL. So it could be just a placeholder, and then they look for someone that they're going to want long-term, potentially. I guess probably at the end of this coming season.
Do you like their personnel right now? Or was this just a case of bad coaching in your estimation?
They do have some great players. I like Landeskog and Duchene and Tyson Barrie. I mean, they've got a lot of really great pieces to work with. They've got a good goaltender. I think that if it's a bad marriage with the kind of style that Patrick Waugh wanted them to play and the players that they've got. I mean, Nathan MacKinnon's another guy. Mm-hmm. They've got... really a team that should be playing an exciting push the pace, kind of like what the Pittsburgh Penguins did this year. I mean, they need someone like that, and I'm sure that that's probably what Joe Sakic's thinking, is that we're going to try and change. I mean, you look at some of the moves they made in the offseason here, where they brought in Patrick Wierkoch, and you talk about a good analytics player. I mean, that's the definition of that. So I think they're going to try and change their playing style significantly, and I think that that's going to do wonders for Nathan MacKinnon and Landis Gogg and Matt Duchene. I think you could see them put up much bigger numbers.
Well, I hope so, because when they're going, that's a group that's incredibly fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, that's what that team should be, but they haven't been. I mean, they've been giving ice time to a lot of defensive anchors like Nick Holden and Stewart, and you know they've really struggled defensively, and it's a shame because they've got such great offensive weapons that you know you don't really want to see those guys get stuck because of systemic issues playing in their own end the whole game.
Can a Leopard change at spots? Can Raw change his game plan at this stage of his career? Maybe more importantly, can Randy Carlyle?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's going to be fascinating to watch. I mean, the Ducks have a very good team. I think they were sixth in the NHL last year. That's a great roster. They're certainly in win-now mode, and I think that the pressure is going to be on Randy Carlyle right away for that team to succeed. So he is going to have to change. He tried to change in Toronto, and it didn't work. I mean, They brought in the new assistant coaches and tried to change the system, and 30, 35 games into the year, they were back right where they were before that. So I don't think Patrick Waugh can change. I think he's too stubborn. I think Randy is certainly going to try, because I think he realizes if it doesn't work here, this is going to be his last stop.
A pleasure, sir. Thank you for doing this.
Yep. Thanks, guys.
James Myrtle joining us from the Globe and Mail with a look at the news of the day, I guess, outside of the Olympics, and that would be Patrick Waugh stepping down. And you've got Duchene, who's in his mid-20s now. Landis Gogg is 22 or 23. You've got MacKinnon, who's 20. That's a really good group of young players that you would want to see more out of. And I'm not the big analytics guy to the extent that Myrtle is. I find it interesting, but I'm not a slave to it. Yeah. The analytics community.
Not that Myrtle is either.
Well, he's really into
it. But he knows it, though.
But the people who swear by analytics, I've always talked to them about teams that are, flying under the radar, or maybe underachieving. And the first name out of almost everyone's mouth is Colorado and how bad they are when you look at this team analytically. And for Waugh to move, I'm sure there are those, like James just said, Colorado will be a better team without Patrick Waugh. There's no data to suggest that he's a good coach at the NHL level.
Yeah, that's interesting, because people could argue, I guess, that he took that team from nowhere and did something with it.
Mm-hmm.
Or is that, again, just luck of the players that he had?
As you said, they got a little lucky, and their goaltender played over his head in Varlamov, and good things happened. They got in. Conversely, if you do look at it, if I'm not mistaken, the best Corsi team this year, puck possession, was the LA Kings, and they didn't make the playoffs.
There you go.
So,
you never know.
It's not an exact science, but it's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I'll leave it at that, because I know there are those who go, well, it's more than just an interesting read. That's the way you judge a team.
Yeah. Well, and there are teams that are following it. And again, same thing for baseball, when you can get lost when you're chasing numbers sometimes.
Should mention a couple of things from a programming standpoint. Tomorrow, we'll get some Olympic action in for you as Canada takes on France in women's Olympic soccer. It's the quarterfinal. We will have it live for you at 6:00. And as soon as that is over, we will go over to the Argo Blue Bomber game. We will start that broadcast on tsn1050.ca. And it shouldn't be too long, maybe midway through the first quarter, before we were able to flip the switch and bring you aboard for the rest of the broadcast. So if you are stuck in traffic tomorrow, if you are in hell on a Friday afternoon, it's okay, because you'll have Canada in soccer at the Olympics, and then you'll have the Argo game coming up. So you can just relax, chill.
Grab an ice cream.
Everything.
Enjoy the drive.
Yes, yes. You can't drive and grab an ice beer and enjoy the drive.
No, you cannot do that.
Get the ice cream.
Yeah.
Make sure it's cool in the car.
Yeah.
And just have a fantastic evening listening to Canadian women's soccer and then the Argo Blue Bomber game here on TSN 1050. Among our guests coming up, we have Mike Richter joining us. Mike, a member of the 1996 World Cup of Hockey. He was the MVP of the tournament. And he is, with his teammates, going to be inducted into an actually was inducted into the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame. So we'll find out what that experience was like. He went in as an individual almost a decade ago, and now he goes in with his team. And we'll get his thoughts on the format of this year's World Cup as well as we continue with Richards 1-4. That's Taggart. I'm Hogan. This is TSN 1050. Is the Mike Richards extravaganza, 1-4 daily, Monday to Friday here on TSN 1050. Hogan and Taggart hanging with you until 4 o'clock this afternoon. It's Overdrive at that stage with Brian Hayes and Scotty Mack. We put up another question on the Twitter machine.
What's that question, Hoagie?
The poll would be, where will Patrick Roy end up coaching next year? Or next, sorry, not next year, but
this,
where will he end up coaching next?
Yeah, how long, too, could be another question.
Yeah, but we'll go. This might answer the question the way this is worded. Will he end up coaching Le Canadien de Montréal? Will he end up coaching the Las Vegas expansion team? Will he end up coaching in the Q? Or will he wait until Quebec City finally gets an NHL team and coach it? You can go to TSN 1050 Radio on Twitter and vote. You can follow at Taggart7 or at TSN Mike Hogan and find out what the poll results are very quickly. Like, we put this up a minute ago. There's 70 votes already. Montreal Canadiens, 33%. Las Vegas, 28%. 26% say the Q. And 13% say wait until Quebec City gets here.
What's his relationship like with Montreal? Is he like, since he left?
I think that's been patched. I was there the weekend that they retired his uniform number. It went and had the big Patrick Roy night. I think it was a Grey Cup weekend in Montreal.
Yeah. Okay.
So all of the football media was in town, and they have this as well. So you can imagine what a zoo the downtown was like.
So that was welcoming for him, obviously.
Oh, the fans love. I mean, he's St. Patrick there, right?
Yep.
I mean, the blowout was not. Obviously, it didn't end well.
Yeah.
But I think time has really helped that relationship. You know, and they think about the player now more than they think of the player who walked off and was Mario Tremblay, I guess, was a coach, and then talked to the owner and said, adios, I'm out of here.
I think even the way Myrtle's saying it's a bad idea, but, like, you know, Montreal, it's perfect. Like, to have someone come in almost more just kind of smoke and mirrors to nothing to happen. But people will ram the place.
If this was in a market that needed a little bit of oomph, I could see that happening. Montreal doesn't need ticket sales. They're fine.
No, but they love drama.
Yeah, oh, no kidding.
Yeah, and this is right up their alley.
I don't think Quebec City, if the NHL is ever smart enough to move there, I don't think Quebec City will need that oomph either. I mean, it would be great. It would be a great PR move. The man's a hero there. He won in junior there.
I mean, it's up there with Toronto in terms of the drama in the press every day for the most ridiculous
stuff. 1,000 times more so. Yeah. You know, for the most part, I mean,
they romanticize every stupid little thing.
But they're under the microscope 24/7. Leaf players really aren't.
No,
right? People say this is a tough hockey town.
Well, I think Montreal has their own tabloids, for crying out loud.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It's a different culture.
It is, and Toronto's not a tough hockey market. Mm-hmm. It's not. It's tough.
Scrutiny is tough when you're playing.
But it's volume.
Yeah.
This is an easy media. How many people go out and rip the Leafs on a regular? Look how they've been a crappy team for a long time. They get away with murder in this city.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine this team playing in Philadelphia? That's a tough market.
Yeah.
New York City is a tough market.
Well, Toronto Maple Leaf press kind of attacks the performance, whereas in Montreal, they'll kind of break into the lifestyle or something was said.
Toronto media gets on one or two stories and strangles the stories.
Mm-hmm.
Kessel, Phaneuf, for the last
I'm already
three
getting,
years.
I'm falling asleep right now.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
We'd do a post-game show. I couldn't do one phone call without somebody mentioning either Phaneuf or Kessel. And it got old. There were a million problems with the hockey team, but those were the easiest ones.
Mm-hmm.
That was the eye high apple, right?
Yes.
Boink, I'll take that
for
one.
For sure, yeah.
And there was so much wrong with this hockey team.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, there are only problems.
Sure.
So it was like the more popular problem to talk about today.
It was easy. It was very easy. And was I guilty of it at times? Absolutely. Everybody in this media was. I'm not blaming everybody else.
It's interesting.
It was an easy story.
Like right now, it's more difficult because you can't blame them for the moves they're making. Everything seems to make sense. It's all good. It's almost like you have to, you know, actually concentrate on an actual event or something fresh.
It's not a finely tuned sports car. It doesn't go 0 to 60 in 1 second, right?
Yeah.
When you're at rock bottom, you literally in a salary cap era, you can't turn it around overnight. Mm. And I don't think there's a move that they've made that you can't understand. You might not like the Matt Martin thing. You might not like the move, but you can understand where they're coming from. Mm-hmm. And now you have to give them time to sink or swim.
Yeah.
And I don't know how long that is. But if you're not seeing a constant upgrade on the team, then it's up to the media to hold the feet to the fire.
Yep.
That's what the media should be doing instead of playing kissy face when things aren't going well.
It's no different than like Torts in Vancouver or Torts getting a job anywhere. It's like, I want to see it happen because I get to laugh at the papers every day.
Yes.
Would be Wah in Montreal.
It would be fantastic. I would love to cover a team with John Tortorella as the head coach.
That would be great.
Because it would if
entertainment if, plus.
If you ask stupid questions, you get what you deserve.
And he might just jump on
right?
you.
Do a little homework. Ask a decent question.
Yeah.
Not Here's my favorite. Talk about your goaltender tonight.
Yeah.
That's not a question.
No.
Ask a decent question. I mean, that's what you get paid to do. You've got a whole 60-minute game to watch.
Yeah.
And formulate a decent question. Talk about your goaltender tonight.
Yeah.
It's not a question. Like, are you just mailing it in? Earn your freaking money as a reporter.
Yeah.
And I don't blame coaches and players for snapping at media when they ask stupid questions.
For sure.
Yeah. There we go. Let's move on, shall we?
Let's move on. Don't get too worked up. You're going to throw a sandwich at me.
Yeah. I wish I had a sandwich right now.
Hit the head with pastrami.
Oh, by the way, did you see the guy at the Pirates game last night?
We got a face full of nachos,
that
right?
That was awesome.
That was so good. He totally missed the ball and couldn't get any more nachos in his face.
That was – and a white T-shirt.
Yes.
Good call. If you can't look for that on Twitter, you'll find it, no problem. Mike Richter's going to join us at 3:30. First up, though.
Have some pits on me! Have some pits on me! Oh, have some pits on me! Have some pits on
Don's
me!
Don's dancing. He's getting ready. He blew it last night.
Oh, man. Time for the Pro Line picks. Here he is, Dancing Shawnee.
You had to say I blew it.
How'd
last
that Baltimore
night?
Game go last night?
That was good. That was guaranteed. That was money.
Well, I believe I did say the starting pitcher was going to be god awful in that game.
And?
Yeah,
Oakland sweeps them.
They win 1-0.
Yeah, good call.
Yeah, don't take the over in that game.
So be writing these down, folks, and absolutely bet the opposite. Go ahead, Sean.
See, this is so not true.
Okay, go
I'm
ahead.
Feeling good about go. This one. Oh, okay. I'm feeling real good.
Oh, no.
Feel real good. It's got the twitch. Like
you
want to
know why I feel good?
The Rodney Dangerfield twitch and easy money.
Little.
Because in game.
James Brown.
See, now,
I feel good.
Now, game number 17, we're going to start with a little CFL action. The Montreal
That's
Alouettes.
That's by the way. It's not me.
Could use Patrick Waugh on their coaching staff to fire them up. They have been awful this year. They're in Edmonton. I'm saying take the home plus. That pays a 180. Game number 57, Corey Kluber has been red hot for the Cleveland Indians. They take on the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. That pays a 180. Take the under because of Kluber. 2.23 ERA in his last seven games. And Danny Duffy. Yes, that Danny Duffy. 8-1 for the KC Royals. Take the home plus over the White Sox. $20 pays $110.20.
And you're
buying
the
drinks. You can get way into the game with Proline. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. Proline.